Hey, John, should we roll?
Yeah, we can get going. I'll just go ahead and do the roll call. Eric Simon.
Here.
Maggie Clancy.
Here.
Jeff Beasy. Shannon Roberts. Beth Chang.
Here.
Carrie McLean. Susan Charette.
Yes.
And I think that's it. So, okay, so I don't have any public comment sent in to me. So we'll go ahead to the adoption of the meeting minutes. I did receive some notes on that from Beth Chang.
Yep, just two name spelling corrections. Nick Tyra, the last name of the graphic designer is T-A-I-R-A, and AmeriCorps should be spelled with a P-S at the end instead of an E.
Thanks for sending that ahead of time, Beth.
Hi, this is Katie Neri. I just joined. Just wanted to couldn't get online, so I apologize.
Okay.
Not working out for some reason.
Katie?
Yes.
No problem. We saw you on before, but...
Right. The screen froze for a second there.
Yeah, it just froze, and I went for some reason. Now I'm trying to log back in, and it's not allowing it. It just won't do it. So, hopefully, this is okay, and you can all hear me okay.
Again, no problem. So for George and Katie, you guys are after our commissioner report, so we'll make those brief and then get right to it.
So I'm sorry if we just need to vote for the adoption.
Oh, the minutes. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. So if there's no other discussion on the minutes, I'll just take the vote on that. Eric Simon.
Yep. Approved.
Maggie Clancy.
Yes.
Beth Chang.
Yes.
Susan Charette.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Eric, can we do the commission reports at the end so George doesn't have to sit through those?
Yeah. John, doesn't matter if we mix up the agenda, right?
No, it's totally fine. So yeah, we can go ahead and go to the solid waste discussion item. And I know you guys wanted to kind of keep this open-ended and kind of have a Q&A, but so just to get everyone kind of caught up, the thought is to get a survey out to residents since the contract is close to expiring at the end of April of next year. And a survey would be sent out and we just get feedback on what people like about the current service, the solid waste service, and what they would like to see in a future contract from either the same provider or a new provider, assuming we go out to RFP. But so I've spoken to George and Katie about that as well. So we just brought them to this meeting and wanted them to come before you and explain all the sustainable items they have as a part of their service. Thanks. So I don't know if George, you want to begin or if anyone has direct questions for them.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the opportunity, John, to get in front of everybody tonight. Obviously, Katie and myself are 100% open to answer any questions, but I think sometimes to get everybody warmed up a little bit, maybe better to kind of give a little bit of an overview, kind of some of the things that we have done, within the community for the past while. And, a lot of the green opportunities that the village has now, specifically the composting program, came really out of this commission. Years back when we had the last kind of go around or whatnot, the village and some of the other members that used to be on this board kind of requested that we look into composting. And at the time, that was really not even something that was being done in the state. And we were able to put together a really nice program, I believe, that has just consistently grown every single month since it's come on board. You know, I know there's always been kind of discussions that we wanted to see how can we increase, you know, participation within that, you know, whether it's sharing the bins with the neighbors, finding ways to kind of get people more, you know, interested in that, which was, you know, we've done a lot of like, you know, whether it be like when the block parties were going on, you know, pre-COVID, we would do stuff where we would, you know, have a raffle and every one person got a free year of subscription. You know, so those are a lot of fun things I think that we're doing in order to kind of push a greener initiative. You know, obviously participating in the recycling extravaganza for several years was another really good opportunity for us to kind of partner with the village and some of the members that were really active in this program. You know, well, we come now to this opportunity to look and see how we can really push, you know, a further kind of a greener perspective. I think some of the things that now that we're linked up with LRS, which is a much bigger organization, from a financial perspective, they're able to invest a lot more than my family was able to, just considering the fact that, you know, kind of constrained, obviously, to the capacity that we're able to spend. Well, LRS has put a lot of money into the green initiatives that they have as an organization. So we're just about finished, actually, with a recycling sorting center in Maywood, which is only a stone's throw from the village. So some of the things that we were thinking about would be really great is now that the material would be processed, you know, within, you know, in a corner there, right at the corner there on Thatcher, I think about a mile or less, you know, and then a lot of other things that I'm more than happy to get. I could just talk forever. You know, I could have Katie kind of discuss some things, but I'm really thinking that the next steps for the commission, just as kind of someone that really cares deeply about the River Forest, considering my family, my grandfather and great grandma all were in River Forest and my dad, is the, how do we get, this is the things that were going on at the recycling extravaganza, I think, continued and out of the hands, maybe more of the commission, that responsibility, and more into something where the, you know, the contractor is trying to provide a solution that's fitting to what y'all are looking for. So Katie does know a lot about that. That's something that, you know, she has pioneered and really put together for the company. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to have her speak to the household hazardous waste collection program, the e-waste program that they offer. You know, obviously we have an e-waste program now, but I think that something they offer is much more, or now, you know, we offer is much more kind of robust than what we were able to do before. So if that's okay, I'd love to have her just speak to that.
That'd be great.
Okay. Well, thank you. Is that a yes? Okay.
Yes.
Hearing no no's, I will go ahead. Well, first of all, it's a total pleasure to be here tonight and just have this opportunity. River Forest is an amazing community, and so we're super fortunate to be a part of it now. And so I wanted to just kind of go over briefly a little bit our HHW program. We started it about 4 years ago. I don't know how familiar you are with these household hazardous waste programs, but there's only a couple companies that technically offer it, I think, properly, and we were one of them. So one of the things that we do is a monthly or quarterly, or sometimes we do a couple events per year where we actually pick up the household hazardous waste, not at the curb. We actually have it at a door or a certain location that we would pick it up. And we will collect up to 70 pounds per home per visit as a rule of thumb. All of the material that we collect, it's collected by professional hazardous waste company. We use two different companies. I'll tell you who they are. It's U.S. Ecology and Clean Harbors are both very renowned, very prominent hazardous waste companies. I think if you look and see what some of the other companies are doing, it's a big question mark. We don't really know where the materials are going, but I can assure you with Lakeshore, they're being handled as best as possible, and that both of these companies are also have green initiatives. So they are recycling as much as possible. They're either, I don't know how familiar you are with oil, but we definitely recycle the oil that we collect, paint that we collect, a large majority of the household hazardous waste is actually recycled. Very little of it is buried in a Subtitle C hazardous waste landfill, or some of it has to be incinerated. and also, I think we take some items that are a little hard to handle sometimes, or you know, a lot of companies, even in the household hazardous waste world, won't deal with it with propane tanks or and also latex paint is something else that we're going to start doing that pretty soon here. So that will be all recycled as well. So the program, I mean, it's, you know, we can look at how, if River Grove is interested in this, I think it's extremely affordable. We've, you know, I've been in this business for almost 3 decades and done a lot of events over my career, and all the way around, it's just better for the environment, because, you know, some of these events, a lot of people can't make it out on a Saturday, or, you know, it's nice to have community events, but there are always a lot of, you know, individuals that they just can't make it or can't get it out there. And then that stuff is actually ending up in the garbage, unfortunately. So that's, you know, as far as pricing and all of that, I mean, it's extremely affordable, and that, you know, for us, I mean, after we've kind of got our, you know, heads wrapped around all this, you know, a few years ago, we really were able to, you know, identify participation rates and things like that so that it could be affordable. It's not inexpensive for us by any stretch, but it is affordable for, you know, all intents and purposes. That, you know, not every resident is going to use this program. But I have found, as I've rolled it out, I think, you know, as soon as residents find out about it, they're just extremely excited. They can just put it out and we'll come and get it. We call it kind of an on-demand program. That's what one of our competitors is saying that it is. But on-demand, as we know it, with, you know, a DirecTV, or it's not that kind of on-demand. It's, you know, within a couple weeks to a month, usually, that the material will be picked up. There's different ways we can, you know, we can set up the program so that it's around the same time every month, you know, but for the most part, what we do is we reach out to the customer or the resident, and then they will, you know, they'll give us their information. I'm sorry, let me back up. We actually have a web portal, and in our web portal, we have this for e-waste as well, for our home collection program. It has all of the items that they can, you know, a checklist of the items, so you can select from the household hazardous waste items. Oftentimes, I think with e-waste, we get all kinds of things that are not e-waste by Illinois standards. But with household hazardous waste, it's very important. I mean, there's certain things we, you know, the hazardous waste company is not going to take an unknown bucket of liquid, you know. So there's some things like that. They submit their entry on the portal, through the portal or through our customer service. They can also, you know, call in as well. That's no problem. Our rep will do it for them, with them on the phone, and then they'll receive a call typically within 48 hours. And that call will be a call or an email, whichever preference they have selected, to be communicated with in response. And then we'll give them the date that the pickup will take place. And then they're mailed a kit. The kit consists of basically a big clear plastic bag, or a couple, depending on what they have, or several, depending on how many items they have that are different. And then sometimes labels if they need them. So this is something that the hazardous waste customer service rep will be going over with them. Usually it's pretty simple. I mean, you know, really they could put it out in a box or a couple different boxes, because we have chemists that are actually coming door to door, and they're taking the package, and then they're, you know, basically lab packing or sorting out the materials in the truck and then moving on to the next stop. So again, all these materials, the majority of them are recycled, which is, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize that. So all around, it's a great program as far as that's concerned. And if there are any questions on that, I'm happy to answer them.
Thanks, Katie. That's great. And George put in the chat the link to the LRS portal, which is, I was just checking out, looks pretty interesting too. I'm sure we
have. So the portal, just so you all know, I mean, it's not for every, you know, obviously the community would have to sign on for it, and we would build it into, you know, the contract. Usually that's how we do it. I mean, it's every resident pays something towards it. So that is something you'd want to consider. However, it's very, very nominal. Usually by the time, I mean, we'd have to sit down with it and look and see. It would depend on what River Forest would want to do. And so it's the portal, you'd have to have, you know, the an address or the zip code from a community that actually participates in the program. And you're all welcome to go and use this link, and you can use 60115 as a zip code just to enter the portal. And you can just fill in your information, go all the way through it, and you'll kind of see, we have some provisions in there at the end. So I have, you know, I started this program, or we started this program about 4 years ago. And in the whole 4 years, I have not ever had one single complaint or issue, not one. So it's been incredible. So
Katie, just to clarify on kind of the cost structure. So, you know, for something like composting, the cost is per individual. You're saying that for this program, the cost is spread across all participants in the program, regardless of whether they use this or not?
It's impossible to do it a la carte. And I'll tell you, because, I mean, we pay, just to give you a truth, we pay over $150 per pickup. So if, you know, everybody were to participate or do it a la carte, no one's going to pay $150. Generally speaking, it is very rare. I've had one person, we tried that somewhere, and it just was, it wasn't successful, you know. So that would be almost a waste of time to even offer it that way. I don't know that they would even do it.
I'm not saying we should. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yes.
That makes sense.
And I know, like in the past, one of the things that kind of has been a long time discussion that I've had with many kind of people over the years within the village was, you know, they don't necessarily feel or had felt that, you know, everybody should pay for services that they may not take advantage of. Having said that, I believe this program specifically is something that is similar to just having like waste and recycling services at your home. Mm-hmm. As we get more and more things that we are purchasing every single day, lithium ion batteries, things that we want to divert from the landfill in order to protect not just the residents, not just the people near the landfills, protects the hauler as well. We have countless fires now due to the fact that a lot of these materials are getting into the waste stream. They're causing fires every single day at these transfer stations, landfills, and trucks. So we are a huge advocate to make sure, how can we work with communities, you know, to get everyone to participate. I mean, I've been to a lot of times, it's so funny over the years, one time somebody, you know, came across our website and sent a thing, you know, hey, I need a special pickup of all this material. My, you know, father-in-law passed away. So I went to the house because I just had bought my house and I needed some lawn stuff. And I got tons of different, you know, lawn tools and that. But they had probably 35 different containers of household hazardous waste, and they had no idea what to do with it, you know? And I feel like that is such a recurring theme, especially within the community, that this type of program may not be something that you think you may use, but in the end, it's like, man, I went down to the basement, or we're going to sell the house, and I've got all these different items. I don't know what to do with them. And a lot of times that's when the residents try to either, you know, sneak them out somehow or get rid of them. And that is something that would be so nice to be able to kind of divert from the stream, I think, personally.
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so there's a couple communities that we do that where, you know, demographically, a lot of these people probably wouldn't generally be thinking about household hazardous waste. And I want to piggyback on what George is saying, because when people find out, oh, it's included in the program, they love it. In a community like River Forest, it seems to me anyway, very environmentally aware and conscious, where that's not always the case. I mean, I do think a community like River Forest would absolutely love it. But, you know, it seems to me that the event's a big deal, the extravaganza, and these are some of the things that take place. Or sounds like there's some collection of this material. I don't know, George, is that correct, that they collect hazardous waste at the extravaganza?
They used to. That's not currently going on anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to make sure we have enough time for the commissioners to ask questions. So Beth, you were...
Well, I was just going to make a comment, which is just that I just want to advocate strongly for this to be included in the contract negotiations, because I, for one, really miss the recycling extravaganza. just like struggled for a couple of months to find time to drive my e-waste to what was hopefully a reputable recycling center. And my husband, you know, put all the paint in the back of the car too. And I said, they're not going to take that, right? And it's just still sitting in my garage while I try to figure out what to do with it. So I totally agree that people will use it if it's there. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Beth, I think our commission will make a recommendation to the trustees, right. You know, what we think should be included or not included. So
one of the things too to mention, you know, when I was working at the recycling extravaganza too, one of the challenges there a lot of times, especially if you have larger bulk items in a community that tends to have some more senior residents, if they're not able to get out to that, you know, event because the material that they have is too heavy and whatnot, it really puts a limitation on what they're able to put out. And one of the things, the reason why, you know, Katie had mentioned also, it's not curbside, is because that's really done to protect the residents. We don't want someone walking up to, some kid walking up to the corner and seeing a thing of chemicals and all sorts of stuff, they get into it. So that is the reason why, if you were curious, that's why the material is normally kept kind of right outside the front door or somewhere where someone isn't really going to be going into it. That makes sense.
So George or Katie, I wonder if you could just provide an overview real quick of where the solid waste and recycling and composting, the path it takes. And because that was one of the things we talked about in a separate meeting, where everything kind of ends up compared with what some other companies do with the material. I wonder if you could just kind of go over that briefly, just so everyone is aware, you know, of the process.
Sure. So I think one of the neat things, especially considering the fact, is if you're looking at kind of the greener perspective within the relationship that we currently have now, you know, us being so close to the community, and now with the investment that we have made into Maywood, any day now that new facility will be completed. So really we have an MSW transfer station, which is where all your waste is going. Okay. And then we have a recycling processing center now, but that means the material is actually sorted on site in Maywood and then is transferred out to only domestic processors. So the difference being, in some cases, the material, you know, you see in these videos of material in like Asia or something like that. And, you know, we shipped it off there and, you know, it's getting the river and downstream, things like that. LRS has never sold their materials internationally. They've always kept it domestically, and that's something that we're looking to continue with. And that would mean that your material, you know, is actually going to be recycled properly and not end up in, you know, a river or the ocean sometime in the future.
Well, and also, if I can add to that, sure. You know, something people don't realize, having buyers in America are very high standards. The standards here, that's why a lot of stuff would just go to China, is because, you know, the loads are half contaminated, and either they're contaminated legitimately with something or they're contaminated with other materials, and, you know, more sorting has to take place. So they, you know, these larger companies are literally, I mean, they were, you know, and now they are, you know, looking at other countries like Indonesia and things like that. And I am very proud of that. And I think, you know, you all should be too, that we are, you know, keeping it in America, and our product is so clean, and that's because of the technology that we have, and really a trend setting and the pioneering. I'm saying this with, you know, not trying to say, sell you on something. This is the truth. It is unbelievable, the technology that Lakeshore has brought to the area. And now our competitors, even the biggest in the country and the world, is copying what we're doing. And that's because it makes a huge difference in the end product. So it's not having to, you know, be double and triple transported. We're sending it right here in America. It's being reused in America. So.
Other commissioner questions?
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question about composting, because, you know, one of our goals that we're striving towards is to have an opt-out as opposed to an opt-in program that we have right now. So I had a conversation with a resident recently who said that they would participate in composting if it was offered 6 months out of the year. So I wondered if it would be possible to write a contract where, you know, for the 6 months where people have yard waste, where there might be widespread appeal to using it, might be an opt-out program. And the remaining 6 months of the year, particularly the months where the pickup is every other week, so maybe it could be offered at a lower add-on cost, since it's not during those, you know, if it was structured so that the opt-in was, the opt-out was every week and the opt-in was every other week, that that might be offered at a lower cost, like maybe even half the cost, since it's half the pickup. And we would be capturing, you know, we would be able to meet the needs of the people who are now participating in the composting program, but expand the program and widen the appeal, you know, for people, you know, because nearly every house has some sort of yard waste and would at a minimum participate in that. And then maybe through education over time would be, do more, you know, food scraps and everything. Would it be possible to write a contract like that?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, when you look at obviously kind of the thinking about how do we get people into the composting originally, you know, the discussion is, you know, you almost look at the stickers as being an opportunity for you to start to push people towards the composting cart, right? And not to say that the cost is something that is a good or a bad thing based upon what the cart, what the sticker is, but the thinking there is, you know, okay, how many bags would it take for you to, you know, to meet the price that you're going to pay per month to the cart, you know? And I think that's a great idea, quite frankly, in order to try to, how do we get people to then hopefully stay on board in the winter and realize there is a lot of value in just the food scrap side of it, right? So I think that's definitely something we should entertain and discuss. How could we do it? I mean, the thinking, if we just said, hey, look, you know, they're on board from this to this, and then we will have a route anyway. So we would just say they're not working, you know, or they're not subscribing for these December months or the 4 months, you know, and we just don't include them in the route. That's an easy thing for us to do. And I think that makes a lot of sense, quite frankly, because I personally really, really am glad that people are kind of still adding to it. So definitely something that we should discuss, I think, and further. Absolutely.
Okay.
And that's another point too, is you know, the composting giveaway afterwards, which once was a 20-yard dumpster, now has actually skyrocketed to being one of the most popular things I think the village offers, which the residents getting finished compost back, you know, from us. I think this year it might've been like 4-5 transfer trailer loads.
Yeah, they get free delivery.
So you can't beat that. So that's another great thing that
courtesy of John's guys.
Yeah, they do a great job there.
We'll put that in the contract for you guys.
Give me a wheelbarrow.
I had another question about that because I think Eric Simon brought up last time that in the industrial composting that there might be some chemicals, and I'm just wondering if. Is there any reason that would not be appropriate, say, for somebody who is using that in a garden producing food? And
that's a good question. You know, so the material that we gather from the village, you know, goes to a compost supply, you know, in Sheridan, Illinois. You know, I've known Jeff Herlene for a long time, and this question has come up a few different times. I've never gotten the feedback that it's not the best material basically that you're going to use. I mean, they sell to a lot of the national, you know, I don't think it was Scott's at one time, but a lot of those types of companies, you know, that are selling the same fertilizer that you're looking to have in your yard or your garden, things like that. So I don't believe there's an issue considering the fact that they do have to do testing as well on that material before it's sent out. So I've never heard of anything to the contrary that it would not be. And every time I know I've brought it up before, he's always said that, you know, they meet the, I think it's US agriculture standards or something like that, USG, I think it is, or something like that.
For food.
Yes.
Right. So yeah, this came up, George, just expand on that, because there's several landscapers in town who won't use it, which is fine, right? Like, you know, just because it's industrial compost. Maybe it'd be, you know, I don't know if the processor has like some more information that could be.
Sure, absolutely, I can get that information.
You know, just generally on like what, how they do it, what the process is.
Yeah, and it's windrow composting. So, you know, that's one of the presentations that I've done in quite a few of the different River Forest schools before, is how they actually kind of, where does your material go, is the whole thing that we do in school there. And, you know, part of it is this, the discussion about the compost. I mean, where does your yard waste go / food waste? Goes to, you know, Sheridan, Illinois. And then it is put in windrow compost, in which they basically put in a big tub grinder, grind it up as small as they can, put it in big, you know, 8 feet, 10 feet high sections, and then turn it over frequently to keep that temperature, to keep the anaerobic kind of, you know, microbes in there to break down the material.
Yeah,
that would be good to have that information.
Absolutely. I'll send that over to John, get more info on that from them.
Thank you.
I just have one other quick question about the e-waste. Would that be separate from the household hazardous waste, and how would that work potentially?
So right now, you know, we have that, you know, pay as you throw concept, where residents, if they wanted, they can contact, you know, and pay specific to what the material is. That is a current option. What we have proposed would be basically there's that same HHW portal that Katie could speak more detail in, but basically it's the same concept. We normally handle the e-waste collection. Katie's done a fantastic job actually linking us with some great companies that actually handle the e-waste processing for us. So she can speak to that, but basically it's normally the way we would propose it, I believe, is through a portal, and then they can register it. And then when we do pickups, either it be bi-weekly, monthly, quarterly, whenever the village would like, we would set that up. But I'd love for Katie to speak to the processors that we use currently.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I mean, we use, especially when it comes to the data, I know that's a big deal. At least I think it is, and people should be concerned about that. But we use a certified recycler. We have a couple different ones, but we did recently, we operate some of our facilities as collectors under the Consumer Electronic Recycling Act. And so we have to meet a lot of different standards by the Manufacturers Association, the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency as well, oversees our programs and facilities. So, you know, everything that we do is, I believe, very much above board, even in comparison to some of our local competitors. But I do think that our web portal has really helped, because what people don't realize is, you know, a vacuum cleaner is not electronic waste by the state of Illinois standards. So the portal really helps. And all it is, you know, and not every resident has to use it. It's just there if they want to. They can also call in and we can do it for them, just like the HHW. But it's just a drop, you know, it's a selection of, you know, all the Illinois banned, landfill banned items. And then we do take some additional ones that we recycle, you know, like cell phones or things like that. So,
yeah, I guess I was trying to understand.
It's very helpful.
As a resident, like, would I like mentally have to think of this as, you know, a separate thing from the household hazardous waste, which you're saying?
Yeah, it would be, I mean, it would be, you know, two different. We do that on purpose because not every community wants both. So, you know, we have it basically, it's a la carte. You know, you can pick whichever program you could have both. So I know like waste management has the at your door, and it's one, and that's it. You get both in one and one flat rate, and that's it. You know, where for us, you know, you can choose or you can decide to do both.
So how come the e-waste?
I'm sorry, the
Zoom is really awkward because I don't mean to keep interrupting, but why is the e-waste, you're saying that, like the household hazardous waste potentially would be something included with the contract. Nobody pays extra for it. They just call when they need something picked up. But the e-waste is something that as an individual, you would pay as you go kind of thing for particular
items?
Well,
I mean, we could structure it differently. And I think that's maybe, you know, some of our, most of our e-waste programs with LRS, it's included in the price. So any resident can call and I can assure you, you know, many residents use the e-waste program. It's well worth it overall. So, you know, it would just be,
okay.
You know, they don't have to pay. We can structure it any way you want, really. So
yeah, I think maybe I can confuse the group a little bit. So just currently the model is, because when the original contract was put together, there wasn't really an e-waste solution at the time. So we kind of bootstrapped this current program, which is, you know, that goes back to that I think the older thought, which was like, you know, hey, if I'm not going to use it, I don't want to pay for it type of thing. So they're paying a lot for when they're actually using the service. And e-waste in general, the reason we perform that, there's a lot less restrictions. So we can actually do that collection. So it's a lot less costly that versus the fee that Katie was mentioning when they do one pickup for HHW. So that's why we kind of keep them separate. So if a community wants just the e-waste, the lower cost option, they can kind of get that and have that portal opportunity. Whereas if they want to have just HHW, they would go to this one, but really it'd be a landing page where the village would have, you know, a waste and recycling landing page as they do now. And says, if HHW click here, e-waste click here, you know, and the same thing on the LRS website. So it's really not that challenging for the residents to figure out what they're looking to do.
Okay. Thanks.
I have a question about the white glove service, that River Forest currently uses. Do other of your clients use this, or is this unique to River Forest? The pickup by People's Door Waste.
So the Roy Strom, that was the only client that we had that participated in that program, but there are a few that LRS does have on the North Shore that has the same program. Yes.
Okay, so pretty unique, because I mean this is one thing that has come up, and I guess. Just one of my questions is, you know, like what else might be possible to be included, you know, kind of at a near price that we have if we were to switch from the white glove. Like, for example, would that be able to cover the cost of 6 months of opt-out composting?
I don't know. We'd have to see, you know, what the types of changes there are, and. You know, I'm not 100% certain, to be honest with you.
Okay. Is there any other, you know, just for the sake of time here, any other commissioner questions?
I just have one question about pricing for the HHW program. For the ones that you were able to implement 4 years ago, and you were able to put pricing in that was nominal to all residents, whether they used it or not, have you had to go back and increase any pricing once you started to ramp up in the program at all to those initial implementations?
No, we have not. Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, because, you know, and if you think a lot of like events, you know, just something from being in the business that I've learned, is the events are very expensive. So when, you know, you have, you know, and you may not use, I mean, it's only one day on top of it. And, you know, they're usually going to cost, at least in our experience, you know, about double what it would cost to offer it at the curb, even with additional participation over time. But usually, I mean, you've got people that clean out their garages one or two times, and then they may have a few items here and there, you know. So, but then there are some people that use it very frequently. So it just depends on, you know, varies there. So, yeah, but we've not had it where it's like we've seen the number, the participation increase so significantly that it would be like, okay, oh my gosh, you know. And I think we would be very clear about that if we needed to do that. And that would be on us, not you. So, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, commissioners? Okay. That's great, you guys. George, Katie, thank you guys so much for coming on. You know, if we have more questions, we'll just, you know, we'll go through John and you know, get those answered. And you know, we appreciate all the information though.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Bye bye.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye bye.
Bye.
Okay, I'm glad we did that. That was good.
Yeah.
So we do need to kind of figure out how we want to, and Lisa, your feedback on this would be good. Like, how do, you know, first of all, when do we have to provide feedback? You know, how should we do that? To the trustees, that is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, John, I look to you in terms of when it would be required. I think you could do it in one of two ways. You could do a presentation to the board, I would think, or you can, you know, submit kind of something in writing. And then have somebody, you know, kind of provide, you know, kind of comment on, you know, some sort of written point of view. So I think it's totally up to you how you want to communicate.
So what, you know, what I'll do is I'll try to capture, you know, what I think this commission is thinking.
Okay.
You know, which is essentially, and then I'll get everybody's feedback on that. So, you know, what I think I'm hearing is, you know, we're obviously very interested in more aggressively pushing composting, right? Which, you know, the easiest way to do that is to make it a opt-out program. Susan has brought up some kind of more creative thinking on, you know, instead of an all or nothing approach, can, you know, certain things be traded off for other services? So instead of looking at composting, opt-out composting as an additional expense, or, you know, hazardous waste as an additional expense, or other parts of the service that can be, you know, that can be taken off and other things added. And then, you know, the hazardous waste we haven't really talked about as a commission, but I would think, you know, everybody would support that. You know, especially since we're really not doing the recycling extravaganza currently. And we have no real portal to kind of keep that out of the landfill right now.
And keep in mind, a lot of what they're talking about, we wouldn't put in the recycling program anyway. Like, we didn't do latex paint. We didn't do pesticides.
Yeah.
We didn't do a lot of those things. We did do batteries. We did do the light bulbs, but a lot of
compact fluorescence. Yeah,
exactly. But a lot of what they're talking about go above and beyond what we would be able to do in any sort of recycling extravaganza.
So I'll start a document, and then I'll circulate it around the commission, and you guys can all give me your feedback and comments, and we'll go from there.
I guess another question I have, because John feels strongly that, well, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but that this should somehow be in a survey. And I guess I'm wondering, how do we balance, like, first of all, the trade-offs and our desire to, you know, come up with a plan, since these are pretty long-term contracts, which is going to be more sustainable, you know?
Right. So, I mean, I think it's two approaches at the same time, that we have the recommendations from the Sustainability Commission and the desires for everything that the commission wants in the contract in the solid waste program. But at the same time, the administration, the board, like they did the last time, wanted feedback from the residents in terms of a survey of the pros and cons of the current service and what residents would like as well. So we can throw all those questions in a resident survey, and also bring up, like you said, Susan, if people still like the white glove top of driveway service, or if they don't, you know, ask that question, throw that out there, and just get their feedback, but also have the commission's recommendations. So the board just has as much information as possible. Like, here's what all the residents said, here's what the commission said, and what should we do? How should we proceed? You know, put all of this in an RFP or pare some of it down? You know, that's kind of the thought. And so I'm gonna try and get that survey narrowed down, and I think we're close to getting it out there. And then we'll have the commission's feedback as well, so that the board can kind of get all of it relatively quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll just say that briefly, and I know we need to move to other parts of the agenda, but I think it makes total sense to get, you know, feedback from the residents. And John, I'm sure you'll be figuring this out, you know, with the timing and, you know, the answers you get back obviously will depend on how it's framed. And so part of what I am unclear on is, you know, whether at what point in time and at what level of specificity does it make sense to pose questions to residents? Because if it's very, you know, general without like cost information or trade-off information, you might get one set of answers. You know, I think the example that Lisa had pulled before, they had gone seemingly further down the line in terms of finding out what was potentially, you know, going to be offered and asked more specific questions. So, you know, I'll just mention that as a challenge, which you'll figure out, I'm sure, John.
I think in a survey, there's always a bias against giving up anything that you already have. And there's always a bias against an additional cost. So, you know, especially when you're coming up with solutions which are more creative and, you know, might be able to.
Yeah, and I know the last survey that was done for this, which goes back several years, people are used to what they're used to, right? They're like, I love my garbage can sits right there and the guy takes it and it's gone. And I love that. And so... So if they're used to it, maybe they
I think another thing would be, you know, and I don't know how you would do, well, I guess you were saying the whole village has to be on the same thing, but, you know, to offer residents a choice to say at this price, would you rather have composting, you know, even if it's only 6 months out of the year, or would you rather have white glove?
Right.
But of course the problem there is this is pre putting a tender out. So it's like, we don't know pricing. So
yeah,
there's, you know, this is kind of full circle to Beth's point that it's challenging to ask questions right now.
Yeah. At this point, the only thing you can say is, would you like X at an additional cost or do you not want X?
Yeah.
Right. So, cause we don't have the exact cost.
And if you throw at an additional cost on the end of anything, like we can tell you how that survey is going to go.
Yeah, if it's a pre-RFP thing, then maybe all you're doing at this stage, which is, I think the way you originally framed it, is basically finding out whether certain types of things are important to people or not. And then if there is not a specific cost to attach to it, then I wouldn't mention it because...
I would be asking, you know, yeah, I totally agree with what Beth is saying is you ask what's important to people and then you ask just more generally if they're willing to pay for some of those things. But that's John, this is your challenge.
My last point on this is that I think in addition to, you know, do you like white glove service? Are you willing to pay additional amounts for it? Because just because it's already there doesn't mean that, I mean, Royston just told us, we are the only village that are on this. So obviously we are paying a cost for this. So not only do you like this, but would you be willing to pay an additional cost for this? And even though it might not be possible to structure it that way, because, you know, John's already said the whole village has to be on the same thing, you can ask the question that way. Do you like this so much that you would be willing to pay an additional cost? Because that's a different question than, you know, do you want this thing that you don't think you're paying for taken away from you? And then nobody's going to say yes. So are you willing to pay more for this? And then we ask the same question for composting. Would you be willing to pay more for this? And it's a way of getting at people's preferences, even though we don't have a specific price.
Right. And, you know, what could be mentioned is, you know, if it goes out to RFP, I mean, I think it will, we can always put an alternate in there and say, okay, here is the base bid with the current setup. And here's the bid with all curbside collection. If that's something, again, the board may not want to go there. The board may say, no, we're just going to do it the way it is, and that's fine. But there are a number of ways to get people more information, you know.
And there's only going to be a certain amount of democratic process here before our elected officials just make those decisions too.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to other things so we have some time.
Sorry. Oh, Eric, just one very quick comment. In the survey, I'd recommend also focusing on what types of waste maybe people are generating. As a sustainability commission, I would want us to be focused on what we are generating as a village so we can properly dispose of it. So maybe in addition to just preferences, we also focus on trying to gain an understanding of how much we are generating to really understand how much we should go to RFP for.
Point. Thanks, Shannon. All right, excellent. So I was gonna do this earlier, but you know, we jumped right into this solid waste discussion, which was great. So we have two new commissioners. Jeff couldn't make it on the call. He apologized. He had a last minute business conflict. Maggie Clancy is with us. I think all or most of you know Maggie, which is great. Maggie, want to just say hi really quick?
Hi.
Welcome. Thank you.
I'm excited to be here.
We'll do this Howard Stern style. So Maggie, I won't really do an interview.
But get real awkward.
but why did you, you know, why were you interested in joining the commission?
Well, obviously living in River Forest and being a part of this community, it's important to me that we take care of it. And also with my kids who are 9 and 12 and they're getting more involved in their school programs and things. It's just a nice extension to kind of share. It's just something we can do as a family. I also just personally work with a transportation company on supporting fleet electrification for school districts, so helping them convert their diesel school buses to electric school buses. And so because of that, I've gotten involved with other organizations. One is called Mothers Out Front, another is Live Green. So I've just been spending a lot of my time on different, you know, working with different folks who are focused on bettering communities. And so it's just been a great education for me. And I thought that by being able to participate with this group, hopefully I can bring something to the table, but also learn a lot from you as well.
Thanks, Maggie. We're excited to have you. Live Green got a good plug today during the climate plan launch events.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the sustainability commissioner in Highland Park is also one of the founding members.
Oh, I think it was Go Green.
Oh, sorry, Go Green. There's just so much green. It's
really I know. They really need to be more creative, I think. Yeah.
What is your company called?
Well, right now I work for National Express, and they're based out of Lyle. And they're the second largest transportation provider, both school bus and transit. And so, and I head up their EV division.
Awesome. Thank you. And we'll have Jeff say hi during the next call. So let's just jump into commissioner reports. Is it okay, Susan, if I pick on you? Just go around the room here.
Yeah, sure. I don't have too much to say. So there's been one Planet Green meeting. There's another one this Thursday. And we had whatever the head of Broadview who was there, because as I've mentioned in other meetings, there's a really strong push in Planet Green now to take our initiatives and spread out. And so it was impressive what they were doing. I also learned that there's another Amazon warehouse site coming to Broadview, and they were going to be, as part of their, you know, contracts, they're going to be putting in some EV charging stations. And so they're trying to get a little mileage out of that. Both Kathy Aducey and Vicky, forget her last name, from the village manager, or I guess, I don't know what her title is, mayor of Oak Park, were also on the call. So that was really nice. And so most of the discussion was on from Broadview, and then, you know, expressions of reaching out across borders. So that was Planet Green. And then the other thing, which I've already talked about a little bit, was sort of on the education front. We're finishing up a project with Roosevelt School. And according to Mr. Cadillac, who we're working there, about 100 students have participated in this program. And he kind of kicked it off on Earth Day. They all watched an instructional version of Kiss the Ground. And then there's, sort of like expanding the native plant plantings there. And I helped them plant three of the raised bed gardens they have in front. And then there are two different summer school classes that are picking this up. One is, it's actually a national park that Mr. Cadillac is lead, but they met me yesterday at the community garden, and they had to walk up and back. So he got there and he said, we have 7 minutes. So I had to talk fast. And unfortunately, this is the only time it's ever happened, but that's when Public Works was mowing too. So it was really hard to hear, but you know, at least I got to see it. And I said, come back, and I let them taste, and we identified plants. And so, you know, it was just really nice to get that message out. And he said they were really excited. And one of the students on the way back said, this has been the best day of summer school. So it was good to get some good feedback. And then culminating in them being registered as a schoolyard habitat with the National Wildlife Federation. So it was just nice. And, you know, and I give a lot of credit to David Hoyt, who really pushed this forward. And now we're hoping with both Lincoln and Roosevelt on board that maybe we can apply a little gentle rivalry to Willard and kind of get that up. There is a teacher there who is very interested, but we need to generate a little bit more parental support and hopefully get things going there. And then maybe from there branch out. You know, we thought of Roosevelt as a pilot and then maybe try to branch out to some of the private schools and see what, if we can have some partnerships with them as well.
That's awesome.
And one more thing, this I guess, so John checked with the landscaper and they're going to be mulching the, right?
Yes, they actually, they already did. Just wanted to throw, yes.
Okay, because I looked at the one on my block and it didn't look like it had been, but anyway, so they did the 50, they did the Parkway for Pollinator Gardens because David Murphy left Deep Roots. And so that was sort of out and they were focusing on the ones from last year, the non-institutional ones for last year, 15 gardens. And so I guess according to John, that's been done.
They said they did all of them. I hope
okay.
They
did. Okay. I'm going to drive around town and look.
Yeah.
And so I have to say some of the ones from the first 2 years are just looking spectacular. I mean, they're really tall and it's really nice. Some are not looking so great, but there's some real good success stories.
Mr. Cadlick's class is coming over to my house tomorrow morning at 9:15 to look at my solar.
Yay.
Yeah. So you're doing great work with those guys.
Yeah.
Shannon.
Hi, I don't really have an update, but wanted to say hi to everyone. So,
never get to see you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Where's Clark, our youngest commissioner?
He just ran out of the room yelling. So I've been chasing around on my phone, hence my video's off. So I finally found my moment. But, yep.
All right, thanks, Shannon. Beth.
I guess have three things just briefly. I tried to listen to part of the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus thing. I'll let you, you know, report more in full on it, Eric, since I couldn't be at the whole thing, but thank you for sending it. And I do think it gives further context to, I'll just briefly say that on the education communication plan, still a work in progress. I have met once with Lauren, our former commissioner, who's now resident volunteer helping me with it. And, you know, I would say that what was most interesting coming out of talking with her is she helped me frame, I would say, more of like an emotional aspect to this message. I think before I was looking at pretty fact-based things, but I loved her kind of idea of the overall concepts to communicate to residents are one, we care, two, we're planning and making progress, and three, we need your help or you can make a difference. And I thought that was a great way to frame it. I mean, I still have to find a way to pinpoint it to something specific, but I think it kind of fits also with what was shared with the regional climate plan, you know, the whole planning and making progress and what we're doing, fitting it into the regional goals. So we also did some more brainstorming just about what to communicate. And besides the same things I've shared with the commission before, she also had the idea that we should frame it in terms of things that residents can be proud of, like 25% reduction in emissions because of the municipal aggregation contract, or maybe some of the projects that the village has undertaken. I guess since Maggie is new, I'll just say what we have been talking about is in terms of communicating what residents can do, that it would be things, bigger things around energy that directly relate to greenhouse gas emissions, but also sort of green living actions. Maybe coming up with a goal of a certain percentage of residents engaging in one or more green living activities that kind of, we did a lot of brainstorming around programs that could generate some kind of excitement and motivation around that goal. And I think what we need to do is figure out what lessons we've learned from like tree trails and Flipgrid and Veg Out to try to get everybody moving in the same direction. I will say that I tried the Veg Out myself and I called a number of restaurants, and I think Carrie, you know, did an incredible job with this, but it is a reminder, just like we had with tree trails, that the implementation just requires so much work, right? Like I called a bunch of places and the people who answered the phones were either like, well, I just work here, I don't know what it is, or I've seen the sticker in the window, but I'm not sure what it is, but let me go ask my manager. One place, Sushi House, by the time she came back from her manager, she actually said, well, we're giving 20% off, which was great, right? But I don't know that people know that. So just continuing challenges with that.
They're giving 20% off for the vegetarian meal that night.
Yeah. But you know, I also called like Bertoli's and they were like, yeah, we always have cheese pizza, you know, feel free to order a cheese pizza, right? So there's like a wide range, I guess, in how the place is interpreted. But I know that it takes like an incredible additional amount of work to you know, move it to something at another level. So I think we just have a lot to learn from the programs that we have tried, and there's a lot of opportunity to continue growing them. And then we also brainstormed again around the communication channels, right? Like I think the easiest thing to do is to probably do like a brief, did you know, write-up in the Village e-newsletter. I think Lauren felt that that was all well and fine, but that sometimes things in the e-newsletter just kind of go in one ear and out the other, or people are not really reading it. So she had some ideas that were much more based on like person-to-person contact, like canvassing, right? Which could be much more impactful, but also really labor intensive. And we'd have to, you know, recruit volunteers to do it. So sorry, I'm not coming with something more fully formed. I kind of feel, I really, you know, I'm committed to coming up with something concrete that we can do maybe in the fall. I know I'm going to be really busy at work over the next month or so, but somehow, you know, we'll have to arrive at just doing something and not let the, what do they say? Not let the perfect be the enemy of the good, or, you know, like we'll just try something in the fall in terms of communication. And then the other thing is I did have been in touch with Ellie about the tree trails. She and Charles have determined with the park district that there's not enough time to roll something out in the summer, but the park district is interested in whatever program they may come up with for the fall. And I know she also followed up on your introduction, Lisa, to Shana at Trinity. So I think these things will just take time to unfold, but that they're continuing to work on them.
All right, thanks, Beth. So maybe just a quick recap. So Beth was on part of the call today. Lisa was.
I was too.
You were? Awesome. Maggie was on too. So yeah, obviously it was a kind of like a star-studded event. So for the few of us that were not on the call, the whole goal of it was basically to launch, you know, Chicago's new climate plan. And, you know, as they kind of stated over and over, it's one of the first regional climate plans in the US. It was constructed with NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. It took more than 2 years. It involved hundreds of stakeholders, hundreds of organizations. You know, in other words, this was a very big effort, and it's a big deal. There's not many of these around. I sent you guys a link to the plan. I highly recommend thumbing through it. Today was really more of kind of the shortest part of the meeting was talking about the plan. Most of it was speakers like Mayor Lightfoot. There was multiple US congressmen on the call. There was the undersecretary for NOAA. There was the European Commission's basically head advisor on environment, and lots more people that spoke. Very, very qualified, very interesting speakers talking about the importance of, first of all, talking about how scary climate change is and how it affects everybody, including places like Chicago, and basically how a comprehensive plan is really critical in order to get this done. So without kind of going into too much detail on it, I definitely suggest that everybody takes a look at it. It's funny because this is one of those events where it was like, okay, like what are we doing? I'm interested to see kind of what the follow-up is after this. Obviously they've spent, millions of dollars and, unbelievable amount of resources coming up with this plan. How it gets executed, I think is obviously like the important part. I don't want to say the easy part's done, but the easy part's done. So how it affects us. And actually, Lisa, I kind of had a question about what we've signed on to and what we haven't signed on to. Because I know like the Highland Park Sustainability Commissioner Coordinator was talking about that they were one of like only four places in the area that have signed on to X. And it kind of got me thinking of, at one point we were going to catalog what we have signed on and what we haven't signed on to. I don't know if you have an idea on that. If not, we'll just have to do the work, figure that out. You're on mute, Lisa.
It's on the website, what we've signed up, what we've agreed to. And actually there are links to the actual documents that, were signed. So we did sign, up for, I had to pull out the deck that has all those things in it, but I could certainly kind of shoot an email to you once I get confirmation from folks what we've signed up for. But like at the end of the day, in terms of, Greenest Core and that whole thing, I think we've signed up for the Greenest Region Compact. We did sign up for the Chicago, the National Mayors.
Right, and the Chicago Climate Charter.
Correct.
And the Paris,
the Chicago Climate Charter, I think was the bloom, like was our response to
to the governments. The reason I bring that up is because like it's an interesting question. First of all, we're members of the MMC, of Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. So this huge effort that, everybody attended today, we're part of. I don't want to, as Beth would always say to me, bury the lead. That's I think the important part here is that this is not something that we are on the periphery of just watching what other people are doing. We have been members of the MMC for a long time. This involves us.
And I'll just say that the Village of River Forest Sustainability Commission is specifically listed in Appendix B. Awesome. Not to give you the impression that I read the entire thing, but there was a section that said, something about, the role of municipalities is outlined in Appendix B. So I thought I was going to go there and find all the answers about what we were supposed to do. But it's a list of all the municipalities who, participated in it. And it's actually listed as the Village of River Forest Sustainability Commission. So,
I kind of looked at it and it's part of my questions. And hopefully we can talk more, Eric, just as I get more onboarded with this commission, but they listed their objectives that they're looking to achieve through this plan. And I thought the way I kind of viewed today was more of, here's sort of an outline of what we think are the priorities and where you need to be focused. Now, the individual municipalities need to consider how they're going to meet those objectives. And I was curious I think there are eight of them, where we fit into those different eight, what programs we have in place or how we're looking to achieve whatever the metrics are that we've set for River Forest. So I wanted to go a little bit deeper into what they've outlined. I agree with you. I felt like it wasn't a lot of here's how to get it done, just more of we did something, we've identified key areas of focus. But it's sort of up to the individual leaders within these different municipalities and to figure out how they need to get there.
I think we're gonna find that a lot of our objectives are, of course our objectives are gonna be aligned with, what the objectives of the charter is or the climate plan. I'm not sure what it's officially called.
Yeah, I mean, just like they have in here, optimize building energies, they have very specific thing, actions in which they feel like we need to be considering. And I'm sure we've got things that are going on with each of those categories.
We've always had kind of this question as a commission of like, what are we hitching our horse to? Because there's kind of numerous environmental charters that we're part of. They're all you know, relatively similar, but you know, it would seem like we would want to do a comparison of what this climate plan is asking us to do and what we're doing and see where the gaps are.
And to your point, Eric, you know, the easier part is to sign on, but the, you know, the work is how we're going to get there. And
yeah, look, I'm an operations guy, so I sit through those things just with my head in my hands going like, this is all great and good, but how do we get it done?
How do we get there?
Lisa, Beth, anything else from that you wanted to mention? It was recorded, by the way, so as soon as we get our hands on that, I'll get that
link to everybody. That would be good. And I think you said you put up the link to the Climate Action Plan, but I don't see it in the chat. Did you put it there?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it was an email I sent earlier, but I
didn't see that. All right. Yeah, I'll just say that, you know, probably, I think, Maggie, your questions are all really great, and they're the things that we have been struggling with and that I've been struggling with in the communication education plan, because, you know, you have to be clear with people about what your goals are. And yes, this, you know, multi-million dollar question of how do we get there, I was hoping for more kind of, you know, concrete answers from the session today, but work in progress.
Yeah, work in progress. And from what I've heard, there's lots of money, and there's lots of, this was not the end. This was basically the, you know, the start.
So,
you know, so the, you know, I believe the MMC has funding and is aggressively seeking funding, you know, to, you know, kind of just kind of in that same vein of, this is not a great example of like something like Soul Smart, right? Where the MMC got grant funding for it, and then, you know, signed on a bunch of their member communities to get them, you know, that certification. That's what I understand the MMC's role in this is gonna be, is they're gonna continue to get grant funding and help all their member communities achieve these objectives.
And one thing we could do is dust off the Road to Sustainability deck, because we did sign up for, I just checked the village website. We signed the Chicago Climate Charter, as did Rahm Emanuel and a lot of like people around, like mayors around the United States. And then we signed the Greenest Region Compact. So those are the two things. And basically they're all kind of supporting the Paris Accord, or, you know, the Paris Agreement. I always call it the Accord, but it's actually the agreement, I believe. And then basically a lot of what they were talking about, I think we actually do. I do think there's a blank spot when it comes to kind of building, you know, green buildings and things like that. I think that we do probably a lot of that from a village perspective. We don't do it from an individual perspective necessarily, outside of like NICOR and green energy. But to your point, I think you have to start with, what are we currently doing? What does that get us? And then how do we augment what we currently do, and or just, you know, make residents aware of what they can personally do?
Yeah, I think that gap assessment will be helpful since we don't.
Yeah, I just wanted to read one thing. So we're talking about the Chicago Climate Charter, right? Is that the correct one?
No, that's different, actually.
Oh, this is a different. Okay, well, anyway, this is relevant. I just want to read this because it's relevant to today, but... So it talks about, it says, President Ducey is a signatory on behalf of the Village of River Forest to the Chicago Climate Charter. The village has specifically committed to, and the first thing under there is expanding River Forest curbside compost offering to divert more organic material from landfills, reduce the emissions from longer distance to haul the village landfill waste, and turn residents' organic waste into a valuable compost. So I think this is a good opportunity for us to remind the village of this, the board of this commitment, which is prominently stated on our website, and you know, do everything we can to have this included, because we will not have another opportunity for 7 or 8 years. So if this is truly, otherwise we will have to take that down if we don't do it.
And there's no question diversion is part of all these different things we've signed on to. So.
Yeah, but this is a very specific, that's a very specific thing that, you know, is stated on our website that we are trying to do. So we should do everything we can to make that happen.
Yeah, and I just, about the goals thing, you know, outside of this meeting, maybe, you know, Eric, you and I and Lisa can put to bed the question about the Planet Green letter of intent. Or Susan, I think at one point you said you thought you had a signed copy, and I think we either need to, like, find it and have it be part of the communication of the things that we've signed on to, or possibly with the launch of today's climate action plan, those large goals, like the whatever 50% reduction by 2050 or 2030, I don't remember what the dates were. I would think that the idea would be that regional plan would kind of supplant all these others, so that you're not like caught between, like, did we say 25% by 2030 in this document and, you know, that percent by whatever? I mean, you know, I personally would find it helpful to just maybe say, well, why don't we go with the Chicago Climate Action Goals? I mean, they're all such big goals, I don't even know how to get to it anyway, whichever way it's stated.
The first thing to do is to check and see if they're different, because when I look at them, they seem to be pretty aligned. But
yeah, I think they're only off by like a small amount. Is Planet, by the way, is Planet Green still asking us for that, or?
I thought we signed it, but I mean,
we did. We did sign it, but nobody can seem to find a copy. And I, you know, when I put the thing together like a couple months ago, I pulled some percentages from. Now I don't even remember where it was. So we can deal with it offline. But I'm just saying, for communication purposes, we just need to get behind one number, and it doesn't necessarily even matter exactly what it is, as long as we're consistent, because they're just very large goals, right? So.
Let me check, Beth, I dropped the ball on that. Let me check to see if, because either Julie has it, or, you know, or somebody at Village Hall has it.
Or
yeah, and it's maybe not really the most relevant document at this point, but I want to sort of certainly honor the fact that the Village.
Gary should have that as well. I mean, if we can't find it through our sources, Gary Kunin has to have that.
I'll check email too. It's got to be somewhere. Okay. In the spirit of my bedtime of 8:30, let's keep rolling here. So Maggie, as you could see, we usually do at the beginning of the meeting, but we go around and just, you know, if commissioners attended meetings or just, you know, something happened, we kind of do brief reports, but some of them turn into longer conversations. do you have anything at all to add? Lisa, John, okay. So we have other business. Lisa, do we want to talk about the recycling extravaganza?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about that. I mean, we basically, there's a woman that basically twice now has reached out to Kathy Aducey, and then it gets forwarded to me. She really wants us to redo the recycling extravaganza. And for her, it's more of a community engagement thing. Like, she's very excited that she believes it brings the community together. The first time that I answered her, I basically gave her a list of all the different ways that she can get rid of her materials. So for example, again, animal care, like just examples, Animal Care League will take all of the items that, from your pets. Medical waste can be dropped, old medicine can be dropped off at Village Hall in the basement, and or can be dropped off in Oak Park. E-Works in Elk Grove Village can pick, you can drop off all your electronics at the same time, help a not-for-profit that employs disabled people. She said that's all well and good, but I really just want to have like the community come together for this. And at that point, we said that it wasn't something that we were prepared to do, just given the time commitment of volunteers. But she came back again, and we told her, I guess, the same thing, and really also I think pointed to that that it's just too big. And we really, it's hard to get a team together to pull it together. And that if we wanted to do it, it's certainly something that the village would support, but that it would require resident volunteers, somebody that might be accountable to the Sustainability Commission, but run it, in the name of of the village, you know, as opposed to it being the responsibility of somebody that is a commissioner. So she said, thank you very much. She was very, you know, pleasant. And that kind of, you know, kind of that was that. So that comes up every once in a while. But I do think, and again, it's, I defer to you guys because I'm, you know, again, I'm in a different role now. That it is something that if we can encourage residents who, you know, like Lindsay Silver, who wanted to do the bike exchange, she's gonna do that, I'm hoping next year. The first year was very successful. We'll do it every year. If we, you know, can get, you know, a Boy Scout troop or Girl Scout troop to collect, you know, pet materials and drop it off at, you know, Animal Care League. I think there's a way of, like, again, there was probably 10 different stations at the recycling extravaganza. Each of those really does have a, you know, can be a separate committee that just, you know, kind of takes that. I also just thought that the Roy Strom hazardous waste thing is kind of amazing. And I won't tell you my story about Oak Park 25 years ago when we found an ancient bottle of DDT in our basement. It was quite lovely. And trying to get someone to take that was near impossible. Huh. We ended up going out to Naples.
You're in the Des Plaines River, right? Just kidding. So the reason we're bringing this up is just because you might get questions in the community like, hey, what happened with the recycling extravaganza? The reality is that it was the Julie Moeller recycling extravaganza. She put hundreds of hours into that event. It was her baby. We, of course, all supported it and we all put time into it. So, you know, that's just one of those events that had a single hero that made it happen. And it's really hard to, you know, she doesn't live in the community anymore. So it's really hard to replicate that. And like Lisa's saying, this commission does not have the resources to replicate that. It is a, you know, this resident that's bringing it up, she's right. It was a wonderful community event. It brought people together. Every year it got bigger and bigger. But it's something that is going to require more than this commission if it continues in the future. Lisa took a great approach with it and just said, hey, all these services exist, just not at, you know, one community event, unfortunately.
I wonder if it would be possible to expand on the bike exchange and reach out to the Green for Good at each of the schools, and maybe each could take like one component, because there was another one that was like school supplies and books and things. I don't know if that went to Scarce, but someplace like that. So maybe each, you know, each school could just do one piece. And if you weren't doing it all together in one day and spreading it out, it wouldn't be, not that they would have to cover everything, but they could each choose one aspect of it. You know, as you said, maybe one would collect animal stuff, one does bikes, one does school supplies. And, you know, by decentralizing it, make it more.
Make it sustainable. And
make it sustainable, which is what we should also be thinking about.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, I can forward, if anybody wants a, you know, copy of, I'll send you the letter. I'm not, you know, again, it's not my place to share the resident's name, but I'm happy to share the letter if you want to see it. I mean, I can send it to them.
Can you also, Lisa, send the list of places that you sent to her since you compiled it, of where you can take things?
It's not exhaustive.
Yeah.
It's pretty good though. Actually, you should send that out, Lisa. It was a good list. Thanks for handling that.
And Beth, I suggest Earth Paint for your paint.
Okay.
You do have to pay. It's $5 a can, but they do really, really good stuff. I can send you a link.
Thanks.
So moving on to some other business. I did send out that request to see when people were available for us all to get together. There is not a single time that there isn't two or more people that would not be able to make it, which, you know what, it's summer.
Yeah.
It was a bit ambitious probably to. So I think I'm going to punt that to, you know, more to kind of early fall, see if we can find a time once kids are back in school, we're probably all likely to be in town more, at least some of us. Thank you for participating in that. We'll make it happen, I swear. Anybody else have other business?
Well, I just wanted to bring up the next meeting will have to be in person due to the the fact that the emergency, the governor's emergency, will end July 24th. At least that's anticipated. And so the meetings have to go back to in person, unless you can only participate remotely if you have, if you're sick or if you're out of town on business, that kind of thing.
That's so okay. We'll be... It's not too far for us all to go.
Nice to see you guys again.
Yeah. We'll ride our bikes over.
I just have to make sure we have the nameplates for everyone so we can
up front. We're all going to have like a commissioner that's not been around for 2 years as our
It's been a while.
Other business? Okay, so the next meeting is August 17th. Like John said, that's going to be in person, which I think is great. It'll be good to see everybody. In the meantime, I know we'll all be talking and we'll sort out some of this stuff. Once I run across that recording of today's meeting on the climate plan launch event, I'll send that out to everybody. Any last? Okay. Does anyone want to move to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Anyone want to second it?
Second.
Okay. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much. Have an awesome rest of your evening.